Hello and welcome to the Massachusetts Farm to Table podcast, where we explore the fields, kitchens, and stories that make the Massachusetts food scene so special. I'm your host, Nissa Gadbois. Each week, we'll connect with farmers, food producers, and the community that makes the Commonwealth's food scene so vibrant. Join me as we meet the passionate farmers, food producers, and chefs who are shaping the farm-to-table movement right here in Massachusetts. Today, I'm thrilled to have with me Joni Walker from Walker Farm at Whortleberry Hill in New Braintree, Massachusetts, where she raises Devon beef cattle. Joni made a remarkable transition from healthcare to farming over a decade ago and has since become a great example of both sustainability and humane animal care. Join me as we explore her inspiring story and the lessons she's learned along the way. Hi, Joni. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
Good. It's a beautiful day out today. So can you start by telling us a little bit about your farm, its history, and its mission?
I'd be glad to. It's Walker Farm at Whortleberry Hill. The hill behind us is indeed Whortleberry Hill on the map. It's an old historical hill that played a role in King Charles's War. Anyway, hubby grew up here, moved off, we got married. And when his parents passed, we moved back and are buying it out from all the siblings slowly but surely. But somewhere about 15 years ago, I had gotten very, very heavy and very, very diabetic, and I decided I wanted to grow something that would make an impact on that. I had always grown vegetables, etc. The farm had never had animals on it other than when my husband and his brother were, say, in 4-H, etc. But I realized I could spend the rest of my life eating beef, so I looked into that, and that rabbit hole I went down. And the more I looked into it, I wanted it grown humane. I wanted them to have a name. I wanted them to be yummy. I wanted them to be organic. And the more I added things I wanted, the more I realized that I was probably going to have to do this myself. So I said to hubby, hey, we live on a farm. What if I got a cow? And I now run 60 to 70. And this history.
Wow. So you run beef cattle.
Correct. So they're all 100%. I'm one of the very few. I used to be one of the only, but there's one or two more that have come my way that are 100% certified grass-fed and also certified humane. Again, because I wanted to walk the walk. The only thing I'm not certified is organic, because I'm not into that certification. I'm not 100% sure it covers all the bases. But yeah. I am organic, but I'm just not certified.
Great. So you mentioned that health was the reason that you got involved in farming. How did you actually get started?
I was a respiratory therapist. And then the respiratory therapists always get laid off if there's going to be a layoff before the nurses. And I had just been laid off one too many times in my late 50s. And I said, you know what? There's got to be something else I can do. And like I said, I started growing vegetables and doing that. But the biggest bang for the buck I felt for my calories that I was eating was beef, because I love them, love beef. And I could easily be a carnivore. And I just looked into it. I looked into goats. I looked into beef. I looked into sheep. I looked into doing other vegetables. I looked into rice. I looked into everything. And the more, I just kept coming back to beef. So I just decided if I was going to do it, I was going to do it how I wanted it.
Right.
But it was a process. It took me quite a while to get to that point. And when I got my cows, that was the first livestock I had ever had. When they came off a truck, I patted them and said, "Hello, cows," because I didn't know what to do with much with them, although I had taken plenty of courses and visited plenty of farms and read plenty of books. But they were my first. It's like the first time you get a dog. It's like, okay, no matter how prepared you are, and cows are big, so
They
they
are big.
were I'm always amazed at how big they are, but it's always all every life is a learning curve, so it's all been a learning curve.
Absolutely. Did you choose a particular breed to start with?
I did. Hubby used to travel for one of his things he does, and we would go all over the United States every couple of weeks. And once I got this in my head, I started buying grass-fed burgers because I wanted to do apples to apples. And every time I fell in love with a burger and said, "Oh, this has got a nice taste," it was a Devon. And the more I looked into Devons, they have very, very high butter fat. They're as high as any milk cow. So I think that makes them able to marble better because mommy had a lot of fat. They're very docile. They're very friendly. They're very smart. They're an old breed, so they haven't been screwed with much. It's not like having a Pekingese versus a Mastiff. They haven't been fooled with. So, in fact, the original Devons were from the before the Romans. When the Romans were out in their conquest, they took Devons from where they went, and then they brought them eventually to Britain, and there they stayed. So everybody thinks they're British cows, but they're not. They're very, very old cows. So I don't know. I just but because of that, I think they're a more stable breed. I don't have a lot of illness. They deliver on their own. They're very smart. They're very weather weary. Not weary, but wary. They know the weather. They know if they want to go in or go out. Just nice cows to raise. And I had never had livestock, so I really didn't want to pick something that was going to be a problem either. Because like Angus, like they want you to leave the gate open. Angus are kind of high strung, whereas Devons kind of go, it's all right. I'm fine here."
I'm actually familiar with Red Devons. We had somebody run their cattle here for
Oh,
a couple of
nice.
years, so and they were very, very sweet.
They are.
We could walk. We have a trail through our farm, and the cows would just walk across, and they were chill. It was very nice having them here. We miss them now, but they were great to have here.
Anytime, come on down. You can pack cows.
Oh, fantastic. So, Joni, how does the local community play a role in supporting your farm business?
I think really as far as the community, because of what I do, everything is completely non chemical, and also the animals are raised as if they were pets, although they're very big pets that are outside. But what I get for clientele is either foodies that want to really well raised, longer raised, because I raise them longer than most traditional people do, because I want them to marble out really, really nice. And that's hard to do on grass fed. You can't just push it with some grain if you're going to be grass fed. So I have a lot of foodies and quite a few chefs, but by far, most of my customers are have a health challenge. Let me get you settled. There you go. Autoimmune, cancer, epilepsy, et cetera. And they're looking for no chemicals in their food. And I have a small number, well, a good number, not a vast majority, but a good number of people that are vegetarian because of handling of animals. So they come to me because they know that animals were raised and killed humanely. So those are my subsets, and that's not your general populace. As far as the local community, really, we all, most farmers, support each other. If you've got an animal that you need help with, we're all there for each other. And if you go to the farmers markets. We're all trying to help the other one, but Central Mass Grown is a big deal of supporting local farmers. I'm right on, as you know, the line to Western Massachusetts, so I belong to CESA also. They are very productive. The Farm Bureau is another in. The Ag Commissions are. I'm on our local Ag Commission. So really most groups are pretty pro-farmer and pro-local farmer. So although the general populace isn't going to just drop into my store for the most part because I'm so specialized, I have customers in every county in Massachusetts that come just because they know when they're dealing with me, the meat is what I say it is. You know, it's mine. I raised it. I didn't buy the animal. I didn't buy the meat. It didn't get any chemicals. It didn't get anything. So that's my populace. So it's not a big subset of, let's go down to Joni's farm. They might do that once, but not necessarily stay with it.
So how did customers first find out about you? Did you do more markets or?
No, I never did. Usually it's online. People will Google grass-fed meat near me or clean meat near me. Eat Wild is a great resource online, eatwild.com. And I'll just give them a little plug. They charge you $50 to list on them, but they vet you. Like, last year they said, it says here you are American grass-fed certified and I don't see you on your list. I went, oops, I forgot to pay my dues. So I paid my dues and I was on there, but they were very, very good at vetting that. So if you're looking for somewhere to vet what you want, that was a good resource. But I only list on a few places because people that want what I sell are usually going to find me. A vast majority of my people have a health issue. I have five people that beat five now. We had four, but now we have five that beat stage 4, go home and die, brain cancer. We're not even going to treat you. You're so far along. And they have beaten that with their food. So that tells you what's in your food. I have a number of people that are epileptic. I have a vast majority are autoimmune. So those people can't fool around. They've got to get, if they're serious, it's like the diabetics that say they can cover, I'll give me a cupcake, I'll cover it with insulin. Well, that's not taking care of your health. But if you are looking for what you're looking for, then you're going to find it.
Right. So Joni, how do you sell your meat? Do you sell them as sort of shares? Do you sell them as individual cuts? Do people buy like a half cow and put that in their freezer?
Yeah, no, I have a store on the farm, which we put in 7 years ago, and I sell by the piece. I tried selling little packages and that, but everybody wants to know, I don't want this, I want that. And the reason I made a package was so easy. So, and I have a number of people that eat nose to tail. So like if you buy a half, I always tell people, look at the economics of it. If you buy half a cow, you have to eat nose to tail to make that really worth your while, because you're going to get a couple hundred pounds of fat, a couple hundred pounds of bone. You're going to get a 50-pound liver. You're going to get the kidneys. You're going to get are you going to eat all that? And although I have had people that just buy half a cow and burger it, which you'll eat it, but you'll be really sick of it by the time that cow is gone. So I don't want my animals wasted. So I raised them. They have a name. I was there when they were born, probably, if not within an hour. And I don't want to sell you a cow that you're going to throw away half of it. So, and if you do the price and the math on that, if you threw away half the cow, you didn't get such a bargain anyway. So I sell it by the piece, so the person gets what they want. But because it's my store and it's the only thing I do, I'm almost like a butcher. I can go over, okay, this is a London broil. That's a cut, not a muscle. And this is what you're going to do. It can be cut out of the front. It can be cut out of the back. I don't like it out of the back, so I don't cut it out of the back. So when you're in the store, look at where the London broil is from, yada, yada, yada. So I can spend an hour or two with a new customer, how to cook it, why you cook it that way, et cetera. So, and I love that. I went through training through the Beef Council, which is the Beef It's What's For Dinner people. And so I kind of love that aspect of it, that I not only raise this animal, but I can get you so that you get the best experience out of eating that animal, which is fair to you and fair to the animal. So at my store, that's where I sell it, at my store.
At your store, education is so important, I think, when you're really putting your heart into what you're producing. It's so important to educate our customers to get the most out of what they're buying from us, so that
Correct.
it's such a nice thing for people to know that they can come and find out how to prepare their meat. Have you faced any challenges farming in Massachusetts? And if you did, how did you overcome those?
The biggest challenge is always the weather. 2016, with the drought, we almost ran out of water. Many people did. I had an old, my 200, 300 now year old spring fed well up in Wattleberry Hill, went dry, which is never done in its 300 years. But across the street, I had an old dug well that somebody had dug 100 years ago, and that trickled. So all we did all day long was trickle water into tubs, and when the tub was full, bring it over, bring it back, because cows will go through 500 gallons a day. My cows will. Plus, you got the house and the farm, and that was that. And then I had to buy so much hay; it was almost to the point where I couldn't afford it. I had to redo my farm loan because of that, just to be able to buy the hay. So, and of course, I'm buying organic hay that I can vet that is organic, so it's not, somebody around the corner's hay. So it that was the worst challenge I've had last year with the drought, then the floods. It was very challenging, but nowhere near like 2016. So truly, most of it's the weather. I mean, I've had other small challenges, but nothing like that. The weather is just going to make you or break you as a farmer.
I remember 2016 here on the farm. The grass wasn't growing, nothing was happening. It was terrible.
No, I was feeding hay in the summer. That's unheard of,
It
but
wild,
now it's
right?
spring.
Yeah. Incredible. And then so folks need to know that that also impacts our pricing.
It does. And like I said, I had to redo my farm loan. So what would have been paid off years ago, I'm paying off again because I had to refinance everything just so I could not go out of business. So you just don't know. I mean, we've had so much rain now. I feel like I'm raising mud, but hopefully that'll make for a good spring. But no, 2016 started really, really wet, and then
Did.
it rained.
And then we got nothing for
Right.
ever.
So I don't know. I'm not complaining about the rain, but I want to.
What about some of your most memorable moments on the farm?
Actually, the thing that sticks with me, like when you go to bed and you go, is really just my cows. I am out with them once or twice a day, all of them. I pat them, make sure they're okay, see how they walk. But it's almost like having 60 pets. They know me. I laid down on my favorite one once and fell asleep, and I woke up and I had 10 of them around me. And it's like, how did they sit down without sitting on me? But I think that's the best, is the cows, and then showing people the cows. People don't get to do that, so I love to bring them out and, yep, this is Denny. She's got this baby. This is her mother. This is, and get to know that this is an animal. Any kid that comes, I'm very pushy, like, when you eat your meat, remember that, you're not going to waste it because you don't want to waste this animal that you saw. But food waste is astounding to me. So anytime I can do anything to say something about that, I do, which is another reason I don't sell it in bulk, because it's going to get wasted. Some of it is.
Yeah.
The best part is the animals. I just love the animals. They're the best part of my day.
Yeah, me too. Me too. We've goats here, and seeing them come out in the morning, and then when they have their babies,
Yeah.
oh, it's the best. It's the best. They're really cool. And I agree with you about food waste. Our perspective changed completely when we started farming about food. You have so much more respect for your food when you have to grow it yourself, when you raise those animals, whether it's meat or milk or eggs from chickens, you just really start to appreciate everything that goes into your
Yes.
body, that much more because you're so connected. You know exactly what went in to getting that food onto your plate. And you find the most creative ways to reuse to, oh, what are we going to do with this leftover? And we come up with some. So on that, is there a favorite meal that you make from your beef?
My favorite steak is strip steak, and I like it fried with butter. Very simple.
Yeah, that's good. That's
Salt,
good.
butter, but yep, just the meat and the butter,
So we're all here in Massachusetts, and you said you traveled a lot around the country. What do you think makes Massachusetts different, from a farming perspective?
Well, that's a good question because I did live in Wisconsin for a job for 4 years, and that's very cattle, I mean, mostly dairy, but cattle oriented. And I think it's not an agribusiness here. When you, even if you start going into like upstate New York, there's so many very large farms. But if you go out into the Midwest, you could have 10,000 animals on a farm. So it loses its personalization. Massachusetts is the sixth, central Massachusetts is the sixth largest area in the United States for locally grown, which is astounding to me when you think about California, et cetera. But locally grown, Massachusetts, especially central Massachusetts, supports its own. And that helps every little farmer that's out there. And there aren't really any really big farmers here. So it really works out. I mean, the biggest farmer you're going to have is a few hundred animals. That's not big compared to somewhere else. So just the fact of the small farms, I think, Matt, gives Massachusetts the magic that it has as far as farms, because everybody's a family farm.
Yeah, that I think that makes it so nice too. You get a connection with your food, but also with the family that grows it. It just makes it so special.
It does.
Okay, one last question for you. If you could invite three people, living or historic, to come have dinner at your farm, who would they be?
The number one that comes to mind is Temple Grandin. I have been lucky enough to take private cattle handling courses from Temple Grandin, and her outlook on animals is astounding to me, particularly because of her Asperger's. So she doesn't fool around. She calls a spade, and I love that. But she has done more in her cattle handling facilities to impact the most animals of anyone I know. Someone who's passed is Jerry Brunetti. He was a big soil health ecologist thing. I have been lucky enough to meet him a number of times. And he just was a sweet, gentle, nice man. He eventually succumbed to several, he recovered from cancer several times, but in the end it got him. He just was, and it's Jerry Brunetti, in case anybody's looking to look him up. He's just wonderful. He just did a lot of writing on the soil and ecosystems and farms. And the other one is my first ecological person is Rachel Carlson with Silent Spring. We had a different family. We were raised holistically and homeopathically, et cetera. And for my 7th birthday, I was given Silent Spring for a book. That tells you how our family was with that. But I would have loved to have met her. She's the only one in my top three that I haven't met. But she just was so advanced in her thinking about the what we have as an impact on our planet. So those are my three.
That's excellent. Actually, Silent Spring is required reading in our homeschool here for my high school.
Ah, cool.
Excellent.
Threaten them. Say I had to read it at 7. Well, I didn't have to, but I did.
Joni, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today. I'm hoping to get down and visit you and visit your cows soon.
I would look forward to it. You know, we're muckles.
Wonderful. Hope you have a great season this year. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
This episode of the Massachusetts Farm to Table podcast is brought to you by Renaissance Farms Permaculture and the shop at Renaissance Farms. Please visit them online, and while you're there, sign up for the weekly newsletter and get 15% off your next order from the shop. Each edition of the newsletter includes farm news, articles, recipes, and updates on upcoming classes, courses, workshops, and special events. Subscribers also receive exclusive subscriber-only discounts each week. Links are in the show notes. Thank you for joining us on another delicious journey through the Massachusetts Farm to Table podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review us on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to follow us on social media and join our Facebook group where you can join the local Farm to Table movement. Links are in the show notes. If you have any questions, feedback, or suggestions for future guests, we'd love to hear from you. Please drop us a line at massachusettsfarmtotable@gmail.com. Until next time, remember to eat local, support your farmers, and keep the farm-to-table movement moving. Thanks for listening.